Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, WGN TV's Backstory is in its 14th season. Larry Potash is behind it all Sunday nights at 6:30 and 11. And I think that's the second season in a row. It's at the exact same time as last time.
Yeah, that's a record. Thanks for having me. That's what you want in TV, the programming department, moving it to all different time slots.
Yeah.
But, you know, TV has changed so much. I just look at it as we're creating content and people will find it.
Interesting. And that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Absolutely. WGNTV.com/backstory is where you can catch up on the already spectacular new season. And there's a podcast and the Sunday night social media show, Crap I Found in My Basement, which I enjoy more, quite frankly.
Thank you. It's my favorite.
Thanks. Absolutely. Larry Potash, how are you, buddy?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I know I've asked you this before, but like where did you get your passion for the mysterious, the intriguing tales, you know, historical stuff, culture, religion, science? Like, you really dig into it all.
I grew up in Boston, and we never traveled anywhere, so it's all I knew. It was my normal. You've got the Pilgrims, the witch trials. You have, of course, Paul Revere's house and the Constitution, and so you're surrounded by it, and this is kind of what your life is. And so that's the first part of this story. And the second part of the story is when I started working at WGN, an old friend of my dad's, who was a philosophy professor, happened to be out here and saw me on TV. And we got together for these lunches. And it just kind of, we just started talking about the big questions of life. And it kind of inspired me to do all the reading that I was supposed to do in college, but didn't.
Okay. Never too late.
Yeah. And then you realize the real stories in history, we don't really know that well, because we essentially regurgitated some facts we had to memorize at some pop quiz, multiple choice, and we're missing what makes history so fascinating, which is why most people, they just know maybe a sentence or two about these things, and we, of course, go deeper. And they're fascinating stories.
I was going to say, surface level is kind of what we all know, and that's what I love about the show. But like, when did you start looking at some stories and start compiling lists and post-it notes and articles and little things before you even got the show on the air?
Not that long.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I saw a lot, you know, it's changed the tone, and we didn't know what we were doing when we started. We weren't sure where this was going. And there were a few books that I had read that I thought would make great pieces. And we started with that kind of thing. And then it evolved into, hey, let's take an object or like beer or a concept like race or conspiracy theories, and let's see what the history of that is or the psychology of that is. And so we've done those kinds of pieces as well. And and that's what we did, you know, in this season. We started with marijuana. It's a hot topic, and most people don't know the history of that. And yes, there was some mystery and intrigue and scandal in that.
In the cannabis industry, sure. But you always have, like, you know, even before the next season, you must have just a list of things that you want to attack, right?
Yeah, the list is huge now. I'll never get to them all. And I enjoy going through the list and trying to figure out, okay, what can I do now? What can I do quickly?
Yeah.
is part of what drives it. Because it says there's no staff. For the most part, it's me and Mike D'Angelo, who is the photojournalist and editor. And we do get some help here and there. But mostly, I have to kind of flesh all this stuff out.
So it's like 56 episodes maybe on the books right now. You got like another 44 before syndication.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, well, you never know. We'll see.
You never know. Well, there's one that already aired that I saw online, and it has some personal interest for me, but it's about vintage sound returning to Hollywood. And, you know, there was a time that, you know, there was a Foley room, and you would make the sounds that you would hear opening doors and so forth. And it's a unique story about a guy that kind of inherited a collection, but, you know, came across something, and now it's his thing.
Right. We always try to find a contemporary element to tell this history, because you don't want to be stuck in old black and white photos and 90-year-old men. And so this kid had it turned out Scorsese needed these things for a scene in his movie Killers of the Flower Moon, and the guy said, well, why don't you put me in the movie? I know how to use them, and he did. And so that was a nice little twist that made it maybe more of a story than it would have been had it not had that contemporary element.
But it is amazing. Like, most people wouldn't know, especially during the era of, you know, old-time radio, because that's kind of where we're talking about with all this equipment, is that, you know, they would hear doors slamming, they would hear creaks, they would hear babies crying, and it was all just, you know, done with one or two guys in a room.
Yeah, and that happens today. In modern movies, people don't realize that the sounds they're hearing on the big screen are not being made by the things that you're seeing happening on the screen most of the time.
Very, very true. You've got a story this season about American whiskey, also near and dear to my heart, and Chicago, because you never think about Chicago in the whiskey business, but you never thought about Chicago in Hollywood either. Like, we were the film industry capital. So
where does
the, without digging too deep, because we want to watch the show, where does whiskey play a role here in the Windy City?
Well, the capital, the whiskey capital of the United States at one time was Peoria.
Wow.
There was a guy out there, and he had all the stuff, and it was a good central location. So, you know, it wasn't a super sexy part of this story, but it would just surprise me. I did not know that. And whiskey is present throughout the history of America, whether you're talking about the mob, you're talking about the Whiskey Rebellion. So it has a very important role in our culture, and we kind of, and it seems to be making a comeback. And so we kind of follow that trend from the 18th century to today.
I was going to say, 18th century, early during Prohibition, I mean, whiskey in general was made out of just garbage.
It was
just kerosene and just crap just to get it out on the market. And I think they've cleaned it up a little bit.
Sure, they have. But I got a good tip, because I was never a whiskey drinker. To me, it always tasted like gasoline, and I would just never drink it again. And then it's an acquired taste, like a lot of things, but the guy says, I don't care what you're drinking when it comes to hard liquor, the first sip will always be terrible. I said, you need to wait to the third or fourth, and you got to kind of ease into it.
So are you into whiskey now?
Yes, no, but not whiskey, more bourbon.
I would say bourbon. It's funny you say that. Like, I was I built a bar in, it's a new home, but I built a almost classic Chicago bar in my, it looks like a fully operating bar that you would find in a really nice upscale hotel or something. And we named it after my grandfather that year. That would have been 100. He died, decades earlier, and did logos and the whole nine yards, and everyone got glasses. We had a ribbon cutting. It was the whole thing. But I never drank bourbon. I was like, I'm a dirty martini guy. I drink beer, whatever it was, wine. And never really had that. And I know that's what my grandfather and my uncle drank, you know, for their entire life. And my cousin said, you know what? This entire year, as a tribute to them, let's drink some Manhattans. Let's drink some old fashions. Let's sip on some whiskey. And I would say the first couple months was horrifying. Like, it just wasn't my take. Now, you know, now it's a thing. Now I'm going on whiskey tours and trying this and trying that. And yeah, absolutely. It is an acquired taste for sure. You got some stuff on baseball. What else do we have this season?
See, week three. It's whiskey. In the same episode of whiskey, we have a piece on Scotland and its role in the founding of this country, because we tend not to think of Scotland so much as we do, you think, England.
Yeah.
And you think of the Irish because they're so present in the St. Patrick's Day. But early on, a lot of those founding fathers were Scottish or had strong Scottish roots. And the reason we don't know that is because the Scots were better than others at assimilating. They saw that as a plus, especially like even in the 18th century. And so we kind of go into that a little bit and talk about the important role some of these key Scottish people played in shaping Abraham Lincoln and some of these other people.
Very, very cool. So I'm going to continue on with another segment here.
Sure.
We're going to talk 1984 music, because those were our own personal high school years. So that means that was the best.
Right.
Best in movies, best in television, best in music.
Yeah.
And we'll talk music next on 720 WGN. All right. Larry Potash is with us. The new season of Backstory are Sunday night, 6:30 and 11. And you can check things out at WGNTV.com/backstory. So I came across this article, and it's a little older, but it was Rolling Stone magazine that called 1984 pop's greatest year. And, you know, you were, you know, I think a junior in high school. Yes. In Lynn, Massachusetts, yeah. Once the shoe capital of the world. I was a junior at Holy Cross High School in River Grove, the home of Gina Jude's hot dogs. and we were the shit, man. I mean, 1984, yeah. 1985 was our year.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, the 80s were so much fun. They were big. They were colorful. They were happy. At least that's my memory of it. Mm-hmm. And 84 was a big year for the three obvious reasons that come to mind. Thriller, Purple Rain, and Madonna all over the floor at whatever that was, the Grammys, half naked in the bridal mm-hmm. costume or whatever. Those three things, you know, blew up TV.
Well, they did. And also, you know, MTV came on the air years before that. But 1984, it really became... It became what it is known as from that era in 1984 because of all that, because of Springsteen, because of Madonna, because of Prince, and the different genres of music that were kind of popping out at that time.
Yeah, because in 81, there really were no music videos, and literally people started throwing stuff together. But by, you know, Michael Jackson, of course, and Duran Duran changed that game. But then you see Bruce Springsteen, who clearly is not a music video guy, and somehow... He finally was convinced, you got to do this.
Yeah.
And they gave him a makeover, and I didn't even recognize him.
Well, what's funny about that, too, is, okay, so MTV, and I think about this today, like if my kids are flashing through something and MTV comes up, what is that channel?
Yeah, I know.
It's reality crap.
Wow.
I mean, what it is.
It was our version of TikTok, I guess.
Yeah, it was. It's like Pregnant at 16, the fourth reunion. Why does it matter? Like, and where is music on TV right now? Some of the big ones, I was looking at the top 10. When Doves Cry by Prince, we're going to listen a little bit of these, but When Doves Cry by Prince was number one. Two was What's Love Got to Do With It by Tina Turner.
Mm-hmm.
Say, Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson was number three. I'm just going to go through the top 10, but Footloose was number four. So you think about that movie with Kenny Loggins at the helm. Against All Odds, Phil Collins. Number six, Jump, Van Halen. Seven, Hello, Lionel Richie. Eight was Owner of a Lonely Heart by Yes. Nine, Ghostbusters, coming full circle, as that's out again with the original cast, Ray Parker Jr. And Karma Chameleon by Culture Club. So those were the top 10, but, you know, trailing behind them, John Waite, Bruce Springsteen, Cyndi Lauper. And these are all like first hits for a lot of these people.
Yeah. I mean, it was quite a year. I mean, yes. I mean, that was like your Big Brother's band or something. Mm-hmm. Like that
That's
was
right.
the classic rock radio mm-hmm. song. You know, it was good. It was a great song.
Corey Hart, Billy Idol, Olivia Newton-John, Huey Lewis. I mean, these names weren't on the charts in 1983. None of these, a lot of these weren't, actually.
Well, that Huey Lewis Sport album, I mean, there are a number of hits on that. And you think about it today, what artist has an album with five hits on it?
Oh, yeah.
It seems to be more rare.
Yeah, that's very true. But then there was other things on here. Wang Chung, of course.
Yeah. Well, there's it's funny because some 80s songs you hear and you think, okay, this is a timeless song. And others just sound like they're so 80s, like they were made in some 80s music factory.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You know.
Well, but more toward the late 80s, it was very manufactured pop crap. But there's a song on here by Tracy Ullman, number 71, They Don't Know.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that either.
No, I don't remember.
And she was just on Curb this season.
Huh.
But Madonna's got a bunch of them on here. Mellencamp's got a bunch of them on here. Shalimar. Who doesn't love Shalimar?
They have more hits than you think. It's one of they're one of those bands you play a song and oh yeah, they sing that. I forgot about that one.
Major Tom.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
A few songs in the charts that were released in German as well, including that one and 99 Luftballons.
Yes.
And there was Falco's Das Kommissar.
Yeah.
That was released in German.
Yeah, that's right. What were some of the, but like you were into some of the, you know, I would say new wave stuff though.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And not necessarily respective to 1984, but if you want to do a deep dive into what I think are some underrated bands, I would look at Talk Talk, Big Country.
Yeah.
Everybody knows, of course, the hit Big Country. But if you go down deeper into their archive, as well as Talk Talk, they made some really good music.
They absolutely did. 84 was the year jamming in my Ford Pinto. That's how it went. What were you driving in 84?
In 84, I was still driving the Pinto. I had a 74 Ford Pinto. Let's see. Yeah. And then after in college, it finally broke down. And I was driving an 82 Chevette.
Oh, of course.
And I had to shift it into first gear to get it to stop because the brakes were just so-so. And fixing brakes is really expensive.
I had a 1980 Pinto, which I think was the last of the Pinto. Still no air conditioning.
Yeah.
Still
no air conditioning. It didn't have an FM radio. No. It didn't have power steering or brakes.
No, there might have been an A-track, and I had to use an adapter in there to play my cassettes.
I did. Someone installed an A-track for me, and I got an A-track to cassette converter. How about that?
Look at that. All right, Larry Potash, the new season of Backstory, Sunday nights, 6:30 and 11, very consistently on WGN TV, the old number 9. And for podcasts and more, and to catch up on some of those previous episodes, visit WGNTV.com/backstory.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thank you, pal.
Take care.